Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. In a matter of weeks, Aperture has become TV's new content and talent showcase. Chief Executive Jordan Gelber joins me next. Few companies observing media and technology are as future-minded as Parks Associates. So what is Parks' outlook right now on TV's near and far future? We'll learn the next half hour from President Elizabeth Parks, live from Dallas, Texas. Also ahead, another key TV executive departure, more on the renewal merry-go-round, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio's Frequent Tuner Radio, and present on Spotify, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Acast, Verbal Reason, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Music. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to all the good stuff whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Great to have you with us this Friday afternoon for another edition of the program all about TV's current and future. 77 beautiful degrees here in the New York metro area at the top of the hour, and we invite you to be involved. We have a great hour in store for you, two wonderful guests along the way, and we want to hear you too. So pick up the phone and dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio. Get involved in our chat room as well. It's open and ready for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio speaker tune screen. Follow the instructions. We'll be live with you. Jordan Gelber from Aperture joins us live from New York after these news notes. Amid widespread disdain on the TV arena for Walt Disney's firing, sudden firing, I might add, of co-TV overseer Peter Rice, there's another executive departure in progress. Sony Pictures television president Jeff Ross, in that role since 2017, will exit this September. Unlike the Rice situation at Disney, this parting appears amicable, with Frost free to pursue new opportunities. Sony's TV series output under Frost includes Better Call Saul, The Goldbergs, Outlander, Cobra Kai, and The Boys. Soon after news of Frost's exit from Sony went public, Amazon announced that The Boys will be back for a fourth season on Prime Video next year. The Emmy-nominated superhero saga kicked off season 3 last week, with the first episode boosting viewership by 17% from the previous season opener. In other renewal news, Apple TV Plus's musical satire Schmigadoon, that's musical satire Schmigadoon, is set to produce the second season. With all of its cast led by Cecily Strong and Keegan-Michael Key, and yes, including Oscar winner Ariana DeBose, who will be doing the Tony Awards Sunday night on CBS, they will all be back in action. Now, quickies before our first guest, Fargo and The Handmaid's Tale executive producer Warren Littlefield will continue with TV series association at Disney Unit 20th Television and ABC Signature through 2026. The former NBC key executive next effort is The Old Man, starting June 16th on FX, co-starring Jeff Bridges and John Lithgow. Terror Lane Drive, begins its sophomore all-BLK or all-black season June 23rd. Absolution, adapted for the popular Dragon Age video game, joins Netflix Adventures Toon lineup this December. And Peacock is acquiring Lonan's County and The Road to Black Power, a documentary movie that is getting a Tribeca Festival showcase here in New York on Tuesday. And that is news notes for today. And now joining me live from the heart of Manhattan, here in New York, is the chief executive of the new network Aperture, available on Roku, soon on other smart TV sets and devices, Jordan Gelber. Jordan, welcome in.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It is a pleasure. Well, you've been up and running for a few weeks' time. How's it going?
It's going very well, and I will gladly tell you, you're the first to know, but we are officially now not only on Roku, but we are on iOS and Apple TV as of today. So it's been very, very exciting for us.
Great to hear that. And what has the viewership or the audience response been so far to what you're doing?
Well, the audience response has been very exciting. Aperture was created to be a living portfolio to showcase new content. The OTT platform that we have, which is our streaming network, is one of the many services that we offer. Our big thing has really been courting a lot of industry professionals from the development perspective to financing and the networks to come and see us. And we've been having some really great responses from the industry in terms of what we're doing and our mission. So we're really fortunate that we've had such a positive response to our platform.
I want to get to what the creator response is and how you're able to get the content you do in a moment. But first of all, what set this idea of a pipeline for new talent in motion?
That's such a great question. I love talking about this. So what happens for me is that I'm an actress and I started my own business so I would have more freedom to audition whenever I wanted to. But I still always loved the business side of show business. So I took it upon myself to really understand it at a very young age. And what I always found fascinating was the fact that in any other business vertical, you could easily go about it in a way of like, I can pitch my own ideas. I can talk to two executives. It wouldn't be abnormal for me to reach out to people directly that I wanted to work with. But yet in the entertainment industry, I found so much that on a creator, there seemed to be some gatekeeper idea, or there seemed to be so many barriers that people didn't feel comfortable breaking through, or because there wasn't a lot of information on how to do the business side of show business, that a lot of creators were left at a disadvantage because of such a strong learning curve. And I really was passionate about always helping content creators, being one myself and being lucky enough to understand the industry and understand the business side of the industry. I really wanted to help as many people as I could help their dreams come true. So having a pipeline seemed like a logical response. I was actually kind of curious as to why it hadn't been done before. But the structure of the model is a two-sided marketplace. So basically what we do is we connect buyers and sellers, the sellers being the content creators and the buyers being the industry. So we have a three-compartment pipeline where on the front end we have like an agency where a lot of our content is submitted to, and then in the middle is our OTT platform and a couple other development pipelines, and the back end is sales. So a majority of projects that we take in, we're always selling on the back end. So it's a constant rotating door. And that's why I wanted to create it. As I just really wanted to empower content creators to make more informed decisions about what happened to their creative assets.
Jordan, given that you are one of the newest players in the channel world, and you're doing it through smart TV sets and smart TV devices like Roku and now Apple TV, how do you break through to these new creators who want to launch series or made-for-TV movies or unscripted material? What is the key to having them see you as their pipeline?
That's, you know, it's interesting how much TV and just media in general has changed over the last 5 years, let alone last decade. Streaming platforms are the way of the future. Everybody is working or utilizing some smart device. So I like to kind of explain to creators that find us, like, you want to be seen, and a lot of people don't know what the world of OTT is. When I say OTT, a lot of creators don't even know what I mean. OTT means over the top or over the transom, depending on how you look at it. But basically, it's a streaming platform, a streaming network. It's a virtual network. Like Netflix is an OTT platform. Hulu is an OTT platform. Paramount Plus is an OTT platform. This is where television is going, and this is where movies are going and media. And I think that a lot of creators don't understand the new way of distribution, and they're not really understanding that they have to learn the fact that it's an application now. Like, how much do I have to immerse myself in technology? How do I know what the right network is for me? And it's because of all those questions, when before the pipeline seemed a little bit more like specific. Now, you know, you have the ability to submit directly to places. You have the ability to connect directly with people. I do that a lot through LinkedIn. There's a couple other different ways I do that. But the reason why I think that I am, you know, the best fit for a lot of undiscovered talent, or maybe not even undiscovered talent, people that have been in the industry and been making projects and have been going through the festival circuit, I like to help people. And I think that there's so many micro networks out there, and I believe in them all. I think there's an opportunity for everybody. But a lot of the time, a lot of these creators don't understand what to do once they get on a platform. And when they want to talk about development, when I say, hey, where do you want to put your show, they'll name one of the big players, but they can't tell me why. And I think it's because people don't know what they don't know, so they never really understand what's right for them. So I really, really handhold the creators I work with and educating them about the process and really understanding what their direct pathway to success would be and really supporting their desires as a creative. And that's really what I am passionate about doing. So I tried very much to make sure that, like, the artistic integrity isn't diluted, that the vision is still there, that we find as many points of entry as possible to get them in through the door. But the opportunity that they have with our platform, which is the biggest difference between all the other networks out there, is that we don't want to keep you on our platform, which might sound very weird, but the whole purpose of our network platform is to showcase our materials and hope that they get sold automatically. Like, we're always actively pushing out new content, or we will be actively pushing out new content and then constantly selling it on the back end. So we use that as a way to garner views, to gain traction, to get analytics, to really showcase new materials. But we're always educating the creators on how to best utilize our platform to help them get an audience, or to help them better present themselves as creators. And therefore, when we pitch them to the networks, you could say, hey, on Aperture, they received this many views, and their social has this many things, and they won this many awards. It's just a way to give them more information, and we kind of make sure they're no longer in the dark, because I think there's a severe lack of transparency in the industry.
Aperture is the new programming service we are talking about. It started a few weeks ago on Roku, just got on Apple TV, with other smart TV sets and devices coming soon. And we're speaking with Jordan Gelber, the chief executive of the service. He joins me here in New York this half hour on this Friday afternoon. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Happy you're aboard with us as well. Simon Applebaum here from Nueva York, 77 degrees at the top of the hour. If a question or comment for Jordan, ring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. A triple header of shows coming your way next week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at this time. Coming your way on Monday, you'll meet an entrepreneur who's working both in the technology side of things, but also in the programming side of things. He founded a tech site called GeekWire, which gets a lot of attention, and now he has started a website called Joy Source Network, that may become a new television service for Asian Americans and the rest of us. His name is Jonathan Sposato. He put both together. You'll hear him as our lead guest on Monday. Then, reset from last week, we will have Ovation Senior Vice President of Business Development, Will Marks. We'll talk about the brand new Ovation service available on smart TV sets and devices. DigiNet, America the Beautiful, is all about national parks, forests, and other great attractions. And finally, you'll meet a former co-star of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and Mr. Mercedes. Her name is Meg Mesmer. Now she's become a TV entrepreneur, and her first effort is now on YouTube. It is the gentrification dramedy out of Atlanta, Intersection. Meg Mesmer will also be with us, and she's working on not one, but two production companies doing content for TV. It's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Jordan, what are some of the early attractions that people can find on Aperture?
Oh, we have so many unique projects on Aperture right now. Some of the people we've known for years, some of them we just discovered. One of our big content aggregators is Catalyst Series Festival out of Duluth, Minnesota. They've been a wonderful supporter of us. They also have a similar mission of helping creatives get into the industry. And we were able to be really fortunate to look at their entire library of the last 2 years and the current winners from the last festival back in October and really look at who they had. So a lot of our current projects come from Catalyst. So we have a great project called The Circle, which is out of Australia. It has some of the cast members from Outlander in it, and I believe that it is one of the funny shows that we have. One of my favorite shows that we've been really, like, at the top of my mind is Companion. And I say this because Matt Ferrucci from Companion actually came and flew out for our show, Roku launch, actually, that was in the city a few weeks ago. His show, Companion, is about the path of the sober companion. So we have this amazing athlete who went down the wrong path and is trying to get back his career, and he has a sober companion that helps him, and it's about how they navigate their buddy relationship and what's going to happen. And it leaves on like a cliffhanger. So that's been a lot of fun. We have High Flying Jade, that's actually from one of our advisory team members, Jade Asgupta, which is a wonderful documentary about Jade, who she is in the circus. And I really believe that everyone should go check out our shows, because the fact that we have everything from short-form content to documentary films to hopefully soon feature films and some short films like Handful of Rust. I can go on and on, but I think that I'd rather say that we're always looking for new content, and we really want to find more people to showcase on our platform. So right now we have about 7 projects, and we're going to grow that. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. You mentioned that Catalyst, one of the top TV festivals in the nation, is involved. Have you heard from some of the other TV festivals like Series Fest in Denver, ATX, which I think is wrapping up this weekend in Austin, Texas, Norfolk in Long Island, as well as a number of the film festivals that are getting more involved with television, like Dances with Films in Los Angeles, Gina Davis's Bentonville Film Festival, which is doing more TV pilot showcases, and so on and so forth. Have they contacted you about perhaps uniting with their talent that they're finding to give them a break?
Yes, I've been actually really fortunate to work with SiriusFest. I had the pleasure of speaking at a panel virtually last year, and then I actually just spoke a panel live at their last festival a month ago. SiriusFest has been wonderful. I was able to teach a LinkedIn masterclass for entertainment professionals there because I'm always trying to educate creatives on how to utilize other platforms to get business. And SiriusFest is somebody that we recently spoke to. Claire has been amazing, and we look forward to hopefully getting more projects from them. So we're always looking at the different festivals. It's been really amazing to see how many doors are being opened for series. But what's ironic is that I've been in the web series circuit since about 2017. And all over the world, internationally, short-form digital content has been like the go-to. So I've been to all the different series festivals. I've been to the one in Seoul. I've been to the one in Miami. I've been to the one in New York and LA. There are some amazing web series festivals that are really focused on unique TV series content. And episodic content, as I should say. But yeah, we're constantly looking to build strong relationships with different festivals and a lot of different film commissioners because of the fact that we all want to close the loop in terms of how do we find new talents, where are they submitting to us, how can we showcase them, but also how can we help them get to the next level, which is getting that deal that they want.
When you are talking with prospective talent that would like to use your network as a stepping stone, how are you advising them to get their products or their projects funded? Crowdfunding, equity crowdfunding, NFTs, blockchain, cryptocurrency, venture capital, angel investment, bootstrapping. What is sort of the game plan that you are recommending that they follow to get their shows made and then get them on your network?
Well, what we do is, first, we have a very strict talent acquisition process. So we try to find where everybody is at when they submit to us because everyone is in a different level of production. We have projects that are completed, and some of those projects are on our platform. We have projects that have been completed, but maybe they aren't at the right stage or right quality yet to be on our platform. And then we have projects that haven't even been made, but they're maybe in pitch deck form or script form. So we're always looking at different levels of production because we are a series of different pipelines. What we first do when we talk to people, though, is we really find out what their business plan is. And I can tell you that more often than not, that business plan is not in place. So before we even talk about how do we get that funding, I really try to understand what is the goal of the project and how are they trying to accomplish it and what have they done so far to accomplish it. So, for example, people have done crowdfunding, which I think is great. If you want to do your first project, crowdfunding is awesome. There's, of course, a bunch of great sites like Seed and Spark that support specifically filmmakers. But, you know, the normal way of doing business like angel investing or equity crowdfunding, there are so many ways to get investments that I think the first thing that I really try to educate people on is what are you going to do with that money and why? And if money's the problem, then you're really not focusing on what the actual problem, in my opinion, is with the project, which is that people don't have a follow-through plan. Like in any other business, you know, I have another business. I have a marketing agency, and I always talk to businesses in all different verticals, like in finance and in, you know, food and in, you know, fitness and fashion. Like all of these people, they have a five-year plan for their businesses. But when I talk to a content creator who in itself is an entrepreneur with their project, they can always tell me a business plan. Like, I want to understand, like, why did you make this? Why do we care? And why should the story be told now? And then we make a business plan based on that. We find out what funding sources would be best. Like, some of them might be through grants. Some of them might be through submitting to like-minded foundations. Some of them, like, we have this wonderful documentary called The Wild Land, Wild Horses. And the woman running that is so very active in her community that she's constantly speaking to different groups that support her narrative and her project. And because it's a reality show, she's able to raise money and generate awareness. And so therefore people find her because she's constantly putting herself out there. Fundraising can happen from every single area. You just have to make sure you're positioning yourself in the right places and talking to the right people. And it's not just because someone funded one person doesn't mean it's going to be right for you. And I just think that what we do is we speak to people, and then we help them raise money. So we'll be talking to potential investors, or we'll be talking to different funds, or we'll be talking to different individuals and VCs who might be interested in producing a project or development, or, you know, seeing what level of funding is that is needed to take it to the next level. And if nothing has been made yet, yeah, I think crowdfunding is great. But I also think that there's a lot you can do in a low budget now if you haven't made a project before. And there's a lot that needs to be focused on outreach and marketing. And that money, I always find, is never really allocated correctly.
Are you getting pitches from major TV producers or major TV entrepreneurs who come to you and say, look, I have this protege. I think this person has a lot of talent. I right now can't give this person the opportunity to put a series together or a made-for-TV movie together. Maybe you can.
Yes, I've been really fortunate enough that a lot of people of all different, you know, areas of woodwork have come to me from all different areas. I mean, a lot of people I find have really immersed themselves in the world of filmmaking. So we have, like, high-tech entrepreneurs who've reached out and been like, I have this great script that this person I know wrote. I really want to help them make it happen. Can we work with you to make it happen? And luckily enough, you know, between our advisory team and our development team, we have had so many people that have been successful in the industry already. So we really try to make sure that we cover all of our bases. And our front end of our agency, our front end of our business is a creative agency where we're supporting people in, like, getting their materials together. So a lot of the time we have people who are like, hey, I would love to do this, but it's not enough money for me, or I don't have the time, or I believe in the project, but it just seems like a lot of work. Would you be interested? And we always we look at pretty much everything that comes to us. Most of the time, it's word of mouth. A lot of people have been submitting through our site the last few weeks, obviously because of our Roku launch. But we go through every single project with a fine-tooth comb, and we really try to find the best way to help people. But, yeah, we've had some big producers come to us and be like, what can I do with this project? So if I had, you know, this type of film, or I had a three-film deal, could we work with Aputure to make it happen? And, yeah, Aputure Network is the name of the company, but the network isn't the only thing that we do. So we have a very strong development team and producer team where we can make anything happen, because that's what we've been focusing on, is creating a 360 solution for producing and creating and development.
You're hearing Jordan Gelber. She is the chief executive of Aputure, the new filming service now on Roku and on Apple TV, and hopefully coming on other smart TV sets and devices not before too long. She joins me here in New York this half hour on Smart TV Televised, and we're delighted you're with us on this Friday afternoon here on Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTuner Radio, or catching us on replay at our various podcast sites and our new website, tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. So I'm found with you live from New York, 78 degrees at the top of the hour. Question or comment on many minutes with Jordan, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Wednesday, you'll meet a husband and wife entrepreneur team who have come up with one of the most unique projects popping up on smart TV sets and devices in quite some time. It's a series of channels that deal with the heroes among us, the first responders, the police, the fire folks, other folks too. The company is called Pazetta Media. It is quite unique, and you'll hear all about it Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And they're doing very well, by the way, getting their distribution on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. Is Aputure ad support? And if not, would you accept, let's say, a series proposal from an advertiser?
Yes, I actually am very passionate working with companies, so I'm open to anything. As I said, my background is in marketing, so I'm created a lot of content. How I got started was creating content for advertisers and different, like, reality shows and social content. So I'm always open to anything.
And in terms of distribution, you not only have smart TV sets and devices to deal with, but we also have this new universe of multi-channel bundles, from Pluto TV to Local Now to Stir to Buit and so forth, that have popped up the last couple of years. Where are you at in terms of getting more distribution?
So we've been really fortunate enough that a bunch of members from, like, Plex TV and Pluto have come to us. We've been speaking to people there about licensing some of our projects to them, and also our tech partner Endavo has also been very supportive of this. They have a brand new channel called Watch. But, yeah, a lot of these different platforms, we have specific channels that we might be creating to stream directly on their platforms, because we're looking at every single opportunity to get eyeballs on those content creators. You know, it doesn't matter where, as long as it's through Aputure in some way, but we're trying to find a way to get our particular network distributed in as many devices or channeling as possible. But, yeah, Pluto TV, I love. I mean, Plex TV has been wonderful. One of their advisors is a really good mentor of mine. So we've been really talking to them about unique things that we can do to potentially work with people like Plex and Pluto and Stir, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the new series and movies and specials that will be coming up, let's say, on your service in the next few weeks that we should keep an eye out for?
So right now we are in our screening for our next roster of projects. We've actually been talking to people the last few weeks. We received a lot of submissions thanks to our launch party about Roku a few weeks ago. I can't unveil anything just yet, but I will say that hopefully at the end of the summer we'll have some new projects to showcase. So if you have a project, we would love to see your stuff, and feel free to submit it on aperture.tv. But yeah, we have a new roster we'll unveil soon. I'm probably going to have a new roster projects unveil about 10 every couple months, but then the goal is to get over 100 pieces of content up on the platform before the end of the year.
That's 100 different series, specials, made-for-TV, movies, and so on.
Yep, short films, feature films. I mean, the purpose of all the products that we have is either we want to sell them as is or we want to use that as a baseline to make their next project or make the bigger project they were hoping to do. So we have projects in all forms. Like other platforms, I would say we're not limited to the form of the project. We just really – I pretty much very much care about storytelling being the quality. We have very strict quality control, and I care about stories more than anything else. So if it's a great story and, you know, and you're passionate about it, we want to hear about it from you.
And given the expanded capacity of smart sets and devices and these bundles, do you see at some point this being a multi-channel venture where you say you do it one channel to series, scripted, unscripted, one channel to movies, one channel to documentary specials, one channel to variety and other types of specials? Is that sort of the ultimate game plan?
Yes, I have something very big coming in store over the next few weeks that it will be a very specific type of channel. Our goal is to make different channels, like you said. Definitely for series, we want to have a channel where it's like rotating. You know, you have 12 hours that you repeat every so often. We also want to do short films because there's been a huge demand for short films and feature film channels, but also by not only this form of the project, but also like the genre, like maybe have a horror channel or, you know, have a reality show channel or things like that. Right now, since we're still in the infancy of our curation, because we've been very strict with quality control, as we continue to build our roster of projects, we will continue to have new shows because eventually Aperture will have its own program and that will live on the platform. But for right now, everything we're taking is stuff that they're looking to sell.
One other thing, we are seeing more and more podcasts becoming television series, both scripted and unscripted. What kind of role do you see podcast producers playing in your venture?
I love podcasts. I think podcasts are amazing. There's been, you know, the world of transmedia is huge right now, and I think that any form of content you can create to support your narrative is the best thing you can do. Just keep making content. And I actually was in the process of potentially creating a podcast that we were actually going to then utilize to produce a film or a series. So I think podcasts can be very helpful. I mean, especially in the reality TV space. I mean, I've been talking consistently of the book about the Golden State Killer that was made by Patton Oswalt's ex-wife and how it was, she had a blog and then she had a podcast and the podcast became her book and the book was born a documentary and then they caught the guy because of it. Like, anything is possible if you're passionate about it. You know, I've seen a lot of podcasts take all different forms of storytelling. I was a huge fan of A Prairie Home Companion, so I think there's a lot of opportunity there. Podcasts are awesome, especially because you can record them. They could be audio, you know, little segments, or you can also record them with a camera so you have the audio and the video component and distribute that anywhere. We were actually in the process of having a podcast channel, so we will probably eventually in the next 6 months have a podcast channel because we have so many great partners like Rogue Matter who creates different podcasts that we're going to be distributing on the platform.
And ultimately they can be turned into TV series also. They can work both audio and video. That's the way it's ending up going.
Definitely.
The service is
and we'll support
you can find it now on Roku and on Apple TV. It'll be coming soon to other smart TV sets and devices, as well as hopefully multi-channel bundles. For more details about the service online, go to aperture.tv. That's A-P-E-R-T-E-U-R, aperture.tv. And as time goes on, if we find that there are some new series that are taking off with viewers, we'd love to have the creators on this program in future episodes. Jordan Gelber, thank you very much for coming on. Congratulations on your service getting launched, and hopefully it's just going to be onward and upward from here.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Jordan. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Jordan Gelber, Chief Executive of Aperture, joining me here in New York. When we come back, one of the top media and technology research firm people, Elizabeth Parks from Parks Associates, joins us live from Dallas, Texas, and we'll get her worldview on TV's future, plus classic trivia question of the week and more. All that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tuning.com, together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love old-time radio, check out what's happening at Erie House today, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. It's old-time radio of a very horrible and suspenseful tone, if you might get my drift. Erie House today, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 Pacific, exclusively here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised for Friday afternoon, 10th of June, 2022. Simon Applebaum with you live from New Ever York, 78 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Great guest coming away over the next 30 minutes. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Now joining us live from Dallas, Texas, is the head of one of the top media and technology research firms and conference organizers, Parks Associates, Elizabeth Parks. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us. And Elizabeth, are you there? I think we've lost our line with Elizabeth. Elizabeth, give us a call back, 646-652-2906, and as soon as you do, we will get you back on. So Elizabeth will join us or rejoin us shortly. So first, let's get in the message from our sponsor, Audible.com. If you love John Grisham, you should know he's got a brand new book and audiobook available called Sparring Partners, and it's as great as anything he's ever written. And you can get it right now with a trial run with Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital and entertainment information and inspiration. There's over 250,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio, all of our podcast sites, and our website. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. It's audibletrial.com/televised. You get a free audio book, a one-month trial, the great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and while supply lasts, very important health and wellness information. And don't forget, if you're an Amazon Prime Video customer already, you get two audiobooks for your trial of one, including one from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio productions, podcast series, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, great one-woman and one-man shows, and so much more. For all details, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. Now rejoining us live from Dallas, Texas, Elizabeth Parks, the head of Parks Associates. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for inviting me to join today.
It is a pleasure to have you, Elizabeth. What is exciting you the most about TV's future?
Oh, well, there's so much to understand in how consumers are viewing video these days. So I think for me, it's looking to see how companies are entering the market, the direct-to-consumer play, and basically the unbundling and rebundling, so the great unbundle and of cable and the rebundle of OTT services.
Well, you just heard Jordan Gelber from Aperture, and she is one of the latest independent programming players that's using smart TV sets and smart TV devices and multi-channel bundles going through those products to get up and running and give new talent a chance. What was your expectation based on your company's research about how smart sets and devices would be embraced by the public? Has it surprised you?
Well, the TV is the heart of the household as far as any consumer electronics, any connected device goes. So it's usually in the living room and people gather around it. So our data still shows that only 55% of U.S. internet households have a smart TV. So adoption has certainly been growing across the past few years, but there's still more room for growth, and I think it's going to be interesting to see, especially when you see companies like, Comcast coming out with their own hardware. So the move to own the hardware and the services, I think, is very telling. Amazon is also working on that as well.
How are they doing, both Comcast with their X-Class sets as well as Amazon with their Amazon TV sets, which is, of course, has the Amazon Fire TV operating system?
Yeah, so I think these companies are working to really own that data relationship with the customer, and they're recognizing that very clearly, that the hardware and then the software together with the services is where their future revenue lies. In terms of adoption overall of smart televisions, I mean, we saw a nice jump in 2020 as a result of the pandemic, consumers going out and buying more of these devices, but it's also something that, you know, once you have a TV, you don't usually go replace it for a while unless there's some kind of big event, like let's say the Super Bowl. So I think we'll still see continued increases in adoption overall of smart TVs, but I mean, there's a lot of room still to grow.
And we should point out that when you throw in Roku, Amazon Fire TV in terms of streaming sticks and so on and so forth, Google Chromecast, that the number is around 87-88% of all U.S. households have a smart TV product, either a set or a device, whether it's a set-top box, a streaming stick, plug-in, et cetera, that is allowing them to watch tens of billions of hours of content, it seems like every week as opposed to every month as it used to be. By the way, if you have a question or comment for Elizabeth, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Your organization has done a lot of research about interactivity, and the sense we're getting is that this may be the year that interactivity becomes mainstream in a number of ways. Let's take them one by one. First of all, your thoughts about the news that Samsung and Microsoft are getting together to launch a game hub where you can play Xbox games on the television set, not using a console, you just use your voice or your voice remote control because of the artificial intelligence audio that you have in the set or the device, Siri, Alexa, Google Assistant, or you can use a wireless controller that you aim at the set. What do you think of the Samsung-Microsoft development announced earlier this week?
Well, it's a pretty smart move. They're looking to capture that consumer market who might be the sort of the everyday gamer. So you've got the heavy gamers who are going to need this kind of special equipment to have that ultimate gaming experience. And then you have a much larger group of consumers who, you know, could be a mom taking a break wanting to game, could be one of the kids in the house, it could even be a grandparent. So I think this is a new revenue stream that companies are looking to, and that there's a lot of convergence that can go between the entertainment space, gaming, and then a lot of the brands, especially as, you know, you incorporate social media and, you know, various messaging, you know, with that as well. So I think it's a pretty smart move.
Are you hearing, by the way, that that Microsoft may also get involved with a smart TV product of some kind, either a set-top box, an Amazon Fire TV-like device, or something else?
Well, I think, you know, all of the major players are looking at the hardware, the software, and then the services, because that's the integrated, you know, value across the chain, basically. So as far as whether they're specifically, you know, looking to do that, I don't think I could say. At the same time, that hardware play is really going to become critical for that future revenue. And they're all after that and understanding how consumers are moving about services, and that data is gold, as we all know.
Yeah. Samsung is not the only smart TV or device maker looking at doing game hubs. LG is also, they announced at CES back in January in Las Vegas, they're working on one. Other sets are working on as well. And something else that LG is pioneering is a health hub, telehealth hub. They are working with two providers we have covered on this program, Independa, which just introduced some new features, including games on their service, and MyMD, where you can use your television set and connect with an artificial intelligence video-derived human being to give you medical information. There's also MedSign, which is out there as well. Your organization has done a lot of work dealing with telehealth on the television set, as well as in other ways. Is TV gaming as a major device for telehealth interactively?
Absolutely. It is definitely getting in the mix. I think it's going to take a little bit of time for consumers to, you know, embrace the TV as a different tool, but certainly I think the independent LG offering is very interesting, and it's really well beyond just the health side. There's also, like you said, the gaming, the interaction. In a lot of ways, they're looking also to address the social isolation issue that comes with seniors. And so I think that's really very interesting there. There's also another company, Quill and PeoplePower, who are have a joint venture that is with Comcast. And so that is another health platform coming through the entertainment services side. And so I think that's going to be a big deal. So the future of healthcare certainly is in remote care and all of the things that are shared in between, you know, the individual and the providers on the other end.
How big is the medical community getting behind? By the way, let me know offline how we can get in touch with Quill and PeoplePower. We would love to showcase them on a future episode of this program. But is the medical community finally getting behind this? Because last fall when I went to an event here in New York, I met one of your colleagues. There was a sense that it's all about smartphones, it's all about tablets, it's not about television. And I'm wondering if because of the rise of Independa and MedSign and this new product from Comcast, as well as MyMD, whether some minds in the medical community are changing.
Well, I mean, the television is another interface that can be connected and integrated and be very useful in terms of the reach, especially if you think of rural communities and people who, you know, potentially would have to drive, you know, 30, 50, 100 miles for any kind of care. So it's a very complicated, fragmented market, though, and there's a lot to navigate. And so I can understand why a lot of the medical community, the physicians and others who might give the big sigh of, wow, this is complicated, how is this going to work out? And the big question is, who's going to pay for it? I mean, that's always the big question, especially when you're talking about healthcare. So are there reimbursements in the future that will take place? And I think that over time, and these things do take time to develop, that we certainly will see the move towards remote and virtual care. I mean, our data shows now that 64% of consumers have had a telehealth experience, and then we also have a lot of research that, you know, leans into understanding what is that experience mean for the consumer and where they want the next experience to come from. And a lot of that drives back to local doctors. You know, consumers want to talk to their own local physician. So how are you incorporating that want or desire from any consumer, but maybe especially older consumers, so that they can get their local physician through the television and be able to have a quick call and trust that the person on the other end, you know, has some knowledge about their health conditions and can help them, whatever that may be.
Three other areas that I want you to touch base on with interactivity. One is fitness. We know that we have Peloton, we have Beachbody, we have other Apple Fitness Plus. They all use the television set now to transmit their services. And you don't necessarily need to have the bike or the treadmill and ever to use it while you're watching. There's also interactive content. Netflix is, again, back on the interactive TV trail. They did Trivia Quest, their interactive game, animated game show in April. We don't know yet that's going to go into second season. Bear Grylls is going to be doing another You Versus Wild season, we now understand. And there may be some other interactive projects in the works from Netflix. There are some companies that are on the precipice that could maybe get into the interactive TV game, namely GenVid Technologies, as well as Fireside, the Mark Cuban venture, which apparently is going whole hog. We have done stories about GenVid more recently in the recent month, last month, but Fireside last year. And then there's interactive commerce. Roku apparently going to launch interactive ads where you can use the television set to order the product and service, not a smartphone, not a Q code, not a tablet, are off the televisions at the entire time. And Comcast also has a system that they're working on. What, how do you see those three evolving?
Lots of good questions there. So I think in terms of the fitness subscriptions coming from the television or and or from any kind of connected device, I mean, that is definitely here. We're in a subscription service world, and there's a lot of questions around subscription fatigue and when are consumers going to get worn out with, you know, paying $6.99 or $3.99 or $9.99 or whatever the $29.99 number is, and so far we're not seeing a subscription fatigue per se. There may be some tightening up of budgets that comes, especially with a recession, but consumers really seem to be embracing the idea that they're going to get something on a very regular basis and a willingness to pay for it, especially if there's no contract for 3 to 5 years behind it. And I think that's a big change with the subscription models, that you don't have to sign up for all these very long months or years of contracts. You can move in and out of services, and so that creates a comfort level for consumers with subscribing to services. So that's how I would answer on the fitness subscription service question. You also asked about the purchasing through the television experience. And I think that's something probably a lot of us might have seen coming, just in the sense that you can create that connection there when you're watching content to a brand. Now you have all these social influencers and other outside content that gets created as a result just because of people involved, and that attracts, you know, certain type of segment that might be the buyer. And so I think what Roku's doing is really smart. They're looking for other ways to extend the experience and, you know, likely going to capture a segment of the market that's absolutely willing to go click and buy something. I mean, if you think of what happens with Amazon once you have your credit card in there, you know, people go and make one-click purchases all the time, and all of a sudden things are just showing up on their doorstep. You know, the Amazon boxes, this has happened for me personally as well. So the ease of the buy is there as well. They've already got your credit card in there. They can make the purchase. They can send it to you. It's simple. It's easy. It works, and it gives you a product that you want, that you perhaps saw on somebody else that you admire or you like watching, or whatever the case may be with the content.
Coming up momentarily, TV as a smart home hub and the metaverse and the TV role in there, with Elizabeth Parks of Parks Associates during with us this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised in Dallas, Texas. If you have a question or comment or meeting minutes with her, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Classic trivia question also coming up before we leave you at the top of the hour. How close is TV becoming a smart home hub where you can adjust your lights, you can do your air conditioning, manage your energy, all sorts of things? Samsung talked about the idea of a personal assistant called Home Hub at CES, but hasn't said much about it since. What's your sense about the role that TV will play as a smart home hub?
I think it's, again, the television is a great big screen in the home, and so it can enable all sorts of good use cases. As far as the core controller in the home, I think there's definitely a lot of legs there, particularly if you're talking about a company like Samsung and they have smart things, and really it speaks to the larger integration across many, many sort of hundreds of products that are out there that could get incorporated into it. So it's pretty complex, though, for a consumer to have things actually work, right? It sounds good on paper and it looks all good, but then when you get into the reality of the home, and that could be, you know, all sorts of different environments to consider, which is part of the challenge, then it becomes more complicated for the end user, for the consumer, to actually get all this set up right, to have it actually just work, and to feel like their privacy and security are protected, which of course we know is very important to consumers. So the whole home play is something we've been talking about in the smart home space really for decades, and that plug-and-play experience with the simple, easy, unified solutions that just work are still not here, frankly. They're still coming. There's been a lot of work that the industry has done to get the foundation built on that whole home play, but I think there's still some time there. Our data shows that 37% of households now have a smart home device, but any one particular device, the adoption is 15% or less across U.S. households. So the top smart home device and networked camera is just reaching 15%. Smart thermostats are still in the 11 to 13% adoption. There's lots and lots of room to grow. Things like smart door locks and video doorbells are still only in the early double digits, 11 or 13%. So lots and lots of room to grow. So I think it's all coming, and it seems to be moving a little bit faster, but the barriers to adoption, which is it just works, the cost being there, the privacy and security issues, and then the interoperability, those are major problems that have obstacles that have existed and still exist today.
Elizabeth, personal thought before this, before a final question. I wish Samsung would be more public about what they're doing with SmartThings, the role TV plays in that, as well as Home Hub. It's amazing to me that they threw this out at CES and they have not said anything about it since. We've tried, by the way, to get them on this program to talk about this, and they're also their alliance with the Home Connectivity Alliance, which is a very interesting organization that is trying to advance the smart home situation. And I wish that both Samsung and this alliance would be public with us or somebody about what they're up to. Personal thought, and hopefully at some point they will, sooner than later. Finally, metaverse. We hear from Meta, from Mark Zuckerberg, et cetera, about what the metaverse is, but nobody talks about the TV role that's played. Do you have any sense about the role TV can play in making the metaverse happen, especially since Meta has a product called Portal TV, which they've had for the last couple of years, which allows video calls on the television set, which allows augmented reality through the TV set, where you can play a character. It's amazing to me that Meta does what it does and doesn't say anything about the role of television, and nobody else is either. What's your sense about what role TV does have in the last 2 minutes we have in this conversation about the role of metaverse in television?
Sure. So I think for consumers, the metaverse is very difficult to understand. And even for the industry, it is hard to understand how people define it. It's in a way a little bit like IoT, the Internet of Things. What does that mean? It means devices and the cloud and data and an exchange. And so I think for consumers, the metaverse is going to be a hard one to embrace because it's hard to explain even what it is to begin with. And I'm not sure that the Meta company is necessarily helping. So I think they're playing around with a lot of different things to see maybe what sticks, and I think we'll see probably a move back to the business side versus the consumer side and getting the business products out there, because once consumers have experience in the business world, then it can end up moving over to the consumer side. So as far as the television goes and the metaverse, I'll have to get back to you on that one. I'm not sure I have a great answer. I still think this is a very challenging thing for the consumer market. It's very challenging for the business-to-business market as well. And it's an expensive investment no matter how you talk about it. There's certain things you have to have that experience. And so, I just think it's a challenge to get consumers to buy into, really.
Well, if the metaverse is going to happen with a TV role, both of us hopefully will be in position to follow it and bring consumers and the viewers and our listeners what it's all about and how they can be part of that world as it unfolds. The company is Parks Associates. They do a lot of interesting conferences and research about the TV future and the media future as well. If you want to know more details of what they do on a regular basis, go to this website, parksassociates.com. That's Parks Associates, all one phrase. .com. I promise you, it's great reading, And if you're in the opportunity to catch them at a conference live and in person or virtually around the country, do. It's always good, good stuff. Elizabeth, thank you very much for coming on to the fantastic conversation. We'd love to have you back soon, and all the continued best with your organization and what you produce.
Thank you so much, Simon. I appreciate the invitation to join you.
Same here. Take care, and again, have a fantastic weekend.
You too. Thanks.
Elizabeth Parks, the president of Parks Associates, joining us live from Dallas, Texas. Once again, to find out more details about what that organization does, parksassociates.com. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. Final time we're offering this question, and the prize is the new book, The Unexpected Danny Green, by recent TWBT guest Paul Friedman. Here's the question. Rod Serling was the first on-camera narrator of The Twilight Zone. Who was second? Rod Serling was the original on-camera narrator of The Twilight Zone, its initial run on CBS from 1959-1964. Who was second? We'll give you a hint. The show appeared on UPN for one season. And the narrator is currently in another popular series going on another pay service. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Be sure to enclose your name and your mailing address, so if you are first correct answer, you get it. If you don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll pose the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook is Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBT Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to get in, so do so, and all the very best. Thanks to both of our guests for being here and all of you for tuning in. We are back with a 90-minute edition, our first of our triple header next week on Monday. And joining us will be from Joy Sauce Network and GeekWire, Chief Executive Jonathan Posado. Then from Ovation and the new service America the Beautiful on smart TV sets and devices, Senior Vice President Will Marks. And finally, the former co-star of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Miss Mercedes, Meg Nesmer, now involved as creator and co-star of the YouTube gentrification dramedy, Intersection. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up an episode you missed anytime during the weekend, give us check us on our website, tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. Also check us out at tomorrowbetelevised.blogtalkradio.com/televised, as well as all of our podcast locations. Love to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? And what's your thoughts for where TV is at and where it's going, metaverse included, and smart home up too? Well, email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. However you deal with us, we deal back with you within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. And thanks to those of you that are tuning in through our website, tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. Use the bottom of the homepage to give us a question, and if we use your question on the air, you get the credit. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other services of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's General Manager, Dave Sonnenberg, Head of Content. Website service provided by On Podium, the Internet's new podcast outpost. Kanara Fakis is our web coordinator. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace, and Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. For all details, it's audibletrial.com/televise. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic weekend. We are back with the first of our triple header shows next week, Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, all of our podcast affiliates, and tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. Whatever you're doing between now and then, make it safe. Make it the greatest you can. Spend some time with the ones you love, too. And if you haven't been vaccinated, check in with your doctor. Find out where your medical condition stands. Find out all the new treatments available, like the Merck Pfizer pills, available for prescription, free, at pharmacies near you, and then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.